Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. No Bill Cameron today. He is on assignment going with younger son, as Bill likes to call him. I know him as Matt, but Bill and Matt will be heading to they're heading to Birmingham to check out the special broadcast and the special game in Rickwood tonight featuring the Giants and the Cardinals, a salute to baseball's history and Alabama's place in baseball in baseball's history, that stadium's place in baseball history, the Negro Leagues as well. That game takes on even more importance with the passing of Willie Mays earlier this week, an Alabama native who played in Birmingham in that stadium early in his career. And so, yeah, really cool thing that that Bill's going to get to check out there with his son Matt. Special moment. I think that field trip games in baseball are, I don't think you want to overdo it, but I think a couple times a year, especially if you take them to places, I'm fine with international games too, but finding places in America that don't always get Major League Baseball but have a special link to the game, the Field of Dream games they've done in Iowa the last couple of seasons, this game tonight in Birmingham. I believe the broadcast is on Fox, isn't it? This is the Field of Dreams. Yeah, it's 6:15 local time from MLB at Rickwood Field with the Giants and the Cardinals. And that's and I'm sure much of the broadcast will include a salute to the Say Hey Kid Willie Mays, who passed away Tuesday night. Just Monday, the announcement that Willie Mays was not going to be able to attend the game because he didn't go into details, but you can imagine with him passing away the next day, possibly health had something to do with that announcement on Monday. But they made it clear on Monday that Willie Mays would not be attending the game in person, and indeed Willie Mays, though he won't be there, much of the broadcast will be spent. You know, will be dedicated to him and acknowledging his very significant place in the history of the sport, along with a lot of other players from the past who will be saluted, both living and dead, who will be saluted during the broadcast tonight. So yeah, check that out on Fox, MLB at Rickwood, Giants and the Cardinals. Bill Cameron is there. He will be back tomorrow to tell us all about his adventure at Rickwood Field. So in lieu of Bill Cameron, we're gonna try our best to get you through today's show, and of course it's Thursday, so I'm thrilled to welcome in from the Auburn Observer, Justin Ferguson, hanging out with us. How you doing, Ferg?
I'm doing well. I feel kind of I don't know what the best word for it is, because Bill usually gives me a hard time when I come in. And I'll be like, hey, I've been at the Braves game. And he's like, hey, they lost. You know, oh, they lost. I did go yesterday, and they won 7-0, and Sean Murphy actually hit the ball well. And, like, it was a good day. So I wanted to come in here and be like, ha-ha, Bill, I got you. And we were here this past weekend when the Braves, you know, won the series. So
although they are now 0-1 with me at Truist.
Yes, yeah. They're 0-1 with me. We got it. You and Jordan Hill are in trouble, I think.
I almost wore my 25th anniversary Rays hat. You know, I thought about packing it, and I was like, you know, I don't. I want to stay kind of neutral because I I do like the Rays. They're probably my favorite AL team.
Same.
But I'm in Truist, and I don't want to be like a poser.
I mean, you
Rays
see me.
Fan.
I wear my Devil Rays hat all the time.
I mean, we were sitting in the same section as a guy who was clearly a diehard Tampa Bay.
He's wearing
Rays
a kilt,
fan.
And
he had a hat. Is it a Panama?
Yeah,
would you call it a Panama hat? Like a, he had the cowboy.
He had the old John Cohen hat on.
I think of it as like a. I always think of them as like MTV Spring Break hats, because those are the kind of, like, Drew, you know what I'm talking about? Like the kind of hats, the kind of cowboy hat.
Floppy, not quite a bucket hat, but it's all for just shade. You see people at the beach wear them all the time.
The kind of cowboy hat you buy at Wings or a store like Wings on Highway 98 in Northwest Florida. You know,
what is your opinion?
Alvin's Island.
Yeah, I was about to say, you have an opinion on the Alvin's Island surf style war?
I loved the original Alvin's Island location. And
which one's
and
that?
Was it Beach Bums was another one, too? Yeah. There were some classic. I mean,
that and Surf Style are the two ones I see all the time down there. There's like 700 of each.
Well, there was an explosion of Wings. Yeah, you know, which I don't even know if there's still if that's still a thing down in Northwest Florida, but explosion.
Alvin's Island though, that's
Wings.
Like...
Wings was the stores that would sell towels and suntan lotion and souvenirs that said Destin, Florida on it and stuff like that. But yeah, so he was rocking one of those kind of hats and I'm thinking what else he's got the Panama.
He had a Hawaiian. Yeah, the style shirt on, but it was all Rays stuff.
Yeah, Rays. Yeah, this, we're still describing the fan at the Rays fan at the Braves game here. He was rocking the Panama hat. He had a Hawaiian shirt, but it was like sky blue and all Tampa Bay Rays themed stuff on the shirt. I think on the shirt there was even the old school Devil Ray.
Yeah,
which by the way is my suggestion for Tampa, is that I think that the billboards should just be like Batman style. But it should just be the old Tampa Bay Devil Rays
just
logo.
Yeah, just the
black, purple, and green Tampa. Like, I think that on billboards, because they had to, a couple years ago, this was last season, I went opening weekend to a Tampa Bay Rays game, and I noticed that St. Petersburg was absolutely there were these ornately decorated gold and silver sparkling billboards all over town for Wander Franco, which have since been pulled down amid his controversies. And so, yeah, I thought maybe something the Rays could, because that cartoon Tampa Bay Devil Rays probably never going to get into trouble, right? Like, you could put him on a billboard and feel pretty good about. Like, you know, you could stick with that for a while. But anyways, that's again like you said with the Columbus minor league team, like the consulting fees are cheap and some of the ideas are not terrible. So that's I'm thinking, but there's Tampa, when I went last season, the team stores were full of 25th anniversary merchandise, which is also that's a reminder that once you get into, for pretty much any brand these days, once you get to year five, start selling the anniversary merchandise. Start getting into the fifth anniversary, 10th anniversary stuff. I think there's, make it feel like collector's edition things. Tampa had a lot of 25th anniversary season, commemorative season stuff for the Rays. And I've got that's my Tampa Bay Rays hat is. I've got a snapback with the old school logo on it.
Yeah.
Like with the
Well, Saturday the Rays wore the skateboarding Ray. The their City Connects this year are a tribute to skateboarding culture in Tampa, which I was unaware was as popular as it was, but then I did some reading on it and it's like, yeah, there's like huge like skate tournaments and like big events there every year. And their City Connects this year, they have a logo of a Devil Race on a skateboard, and as someone who never really got into skateboarding, like physically, like actually doing it, every time I tried when I was like in middle school, I like hurt myself really badly. But I did. I was a poser. I wear skate shoes all the time. That kind of culture. Played Tony Hawk a lot.
Warped Tour.
Warped Tour. Yeah, absolutely. I bought the home field shirt the other day of the UC Santa Cruz slug on a skateboard. Give me any mascot on a skateboard, I'll probably buy it. So the Devil Ray, I need to get a hat or something like that with him on it.
Yeah, skate coming out with the
Tim. Yeah, skate, yeah, yeah, yeah. Skate coming out. Yeah.
Tony Hawk, that'd be fun. You know about skate too? Yeah, see, Drew knows about skate.
True.
There could be a special podcast dedicated to skate at some point. I think we know a couple people that are pretty fired up about that. Drew lit up as soon as we mentioned skate.
I'll tell you, former Auburn beat writer Josh Vitale, the hands down the best Tony Hawk player I've ever seen in my life. He was like, we handed him a controller because they remastered it for 1 and 2 for the PlayStation, and we handed Josh a controller, and he had not played in a decade, and he like blew everybody out of the water. Like, he just pure muscle memory, he was back in it. Like, he is by far the craziest Tony Hawk player I've ever seen in my life.
I like to think, and I don't want to talk this way because if I run into somebody who's really good, like, I'd probably get shut down. I like to think that would happen with me and GoldenEye. Like, I like to think that if truly...
I could see that, though, yeah.
Like, I like to think that if this was like, all right, well...
Did you ever play Perfect Dark?
No,
I didn't. They're remastering Perfect Dark for the Switch just because of... How popular
there was a stretch of gold, Complex, License to Kill with the pistols, I'd play with the Fate of the Universe on the line and feel pretty good about my chances. But I'm trying to
figure out what I'm good like that at.
Could be NCAA. Could be that basketball. Could be that college basketball game.
I had to take some folks to school in college hoops 2K this weekend. I had to let my younger brother know who was in charge around here.
Oh man, but no. So Bill is in Rickwood. Justin Ferguson is in the house. We're talking about
anything
going on in the world of the sports. Yeah, we've had some cool stuff happen. Well, just over the last couple of weeks, we got to talk to John Cohen.
Yep.
Last Thursday. On this show, we've been threatening to play clips or replay that interview. May not happen today, time permitting. Bill and Coach Dunn tomorrow because I'm going to be out of town. They might decide to do it. If not, we'll try to run sometime next week. A lot of really cool stuff.
Yep.
with John Cohen.
Yeah, I was here for that one last week. Very good interview.
Justin was in the house. You got to ask him about the Nike deal.
Mm-hmm.
in our brief chat with him. We had the softball coaches and the new. Tennis coach,
yes.
Introduced, new women's tennis coach, introduced to the media earlier this week. The Malvos are a 1-2 punch. You know, they're a high energy tandem that I think it's they seem to have faith in how this thing's going to work. You know, not just in the off season and throughout the week, but during games,
sure,
as well.
And I think they should. I mean, you know, obviously they have experience working under that same arrangement at Tennessee that was really, really successful. And yeah, the high energy thing—that was the thing that stuck out to me the most. I mean, I don't cover softball or tennis, but I did kind of catch a couple of clips from the press conference and some interviews and all that. The energy there, and like, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and you know, this is not a knock on Auburn's past softball coaches. You haven't really had that style. At least the three I can think of head coaches for Auburn softball, different energy, different. And we'll see if that can be something that can help the program, you know, take that step up, and because they're gonna need it because of how much tougher SEC softball is about to get with Oklahoma and Texas coming in.
And they seem eager to be ambassadors for the program. I could see them being. A popular speaking engagement, you know, as a tandem. I could see them being a popular show for people, and I bet it's probably going to play well with the boosters too, which is more important than ever before as far as having coaches that inspire enthusiasm and energy and can get the money faucet flowing for folks who want to make an impact in the NIL space and help recruiting. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, Drew, the capable one at the controls. We'd love to hear from you. Tell you what, we'll take a break. We're pretty close to we'll try to keep this thing on time as best we can. JJ Redick, the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Justin Ferguson, you know basketball and you're familiar with with Coach Redick and the
if they're hiring podcasters, I would like to stake my my candidacy for the Pistons job.
It's a
I know I will be taken care of if I get fired if I'm the Pistons head coach.
We'll talk about JJ Redick and some other basketball stuff when we come back. Stick around. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Hey, y'all, this is
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Drew at the controls. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We mentioned before going to break that J.J. Redick has gotten the head coaching job with the Lakers after their pursuit of Danny Hurley Bobby Hurley? Danny Hurley.
Danny
Hurley. Yeah, no, I want to make sure I got that one right. Although, I mean, I guess they probably could have pursued Bobby Hurley as well, but Danny Hurley, the UConn coach, back-to-back national champion, staying in college basketball, the Lakers moving on to what appears to be Plan B, which is 15-year NBA veteran, Duke icon, and ESPN/podcasting personality J.J. Redick, who, I heard, I think it was Nick Wright who said, J.J. Redick has the thinnest resume of anyone hired as an NBA head coach in the last 20 or 25 years. I mean, there is a short list of NBA coaches who were hired without any previous coaching experience. Most of them were pretty prominent former players, too. Larry Bird actually was hired by the Pacers. I mean, it's close to 30 years ago. But Larry Bird got the Pacers job without any coaching experience in his career. We were talking during the break about, I think it was Mark Jackson, Doc Rivers, Steve Kerr, who has won a championship. Steve Nash more recently in Brooklyn.
And my thing is
Jason Kidd, I don't believe had ever been a coach before hired. He got his first job.
I had said during the break, I don't know what makes a good NBA head coach. I feel like, the NBA is very star-driven, and a lot of times a coach just needs to find a way to maximize that and not – like, there's decisions you have to make, there's calls you've got to make and all that, but, like, a lot of the time the ship kind of runs itself if you have enough really good players. I think of the guys who've stuck around the league the longest as really good coaches – and it's not the Redick types, right? It's Greg Popovich, longtime coach. Eric Spoelstra worked his way from video guy in Miami.
Redick types, as far as that's not
not guys who you've just plucked from not coaching and said, hey, here's a head coaching job. You know, Kerr is probably going to be the exception to the rule. Obviously, Doc Rivers made it work for sure. But I think a lot more of the time, these head coaches where this is their first coaching experience, it tends to not work out as much as it works out, right? And I look at some of the coaches that have been really long-running coaches in the league, and you can go back to, back in the 80s, 90s, and the early 2000s. A lot of these guys were lifers, these coaches that were assistants, and they worked their way up. And, I think Spoelstra is the great example of that, because – this dude was the video coordinator for the Heat and, piece by piece by piece worked his way up to the head coaching job because the one thing the Heat do a really good job of as a franchise is they keep people want to stay around and, they want to work for a guy like Pat Riley.
You ask a really good question about sort of what are the primary duties of an NBA head coach these days and, like, what are the strongest qualifications for the job. And I wonder with J.J. Redick, his ability to talk about basketball in a way that informs the layman.
He's a great basketball mind.
I wonder if
he's also really close friends with LeBron James, and that's why this is happening.
I wonder if the Lakers are thinking, well, his ability to explain basketball can help him win press conferences.
Sure,
it can help him relate to the media.
He's a media guy.
Yeah, he's a media guy, and maybe that's more important than ever before as far as having the coach representing your franchise out in public, especially with the army of coaches underneath him who can help with every.
And you look at the coaches that have done a really good job of switching back into media. I think of Stan Van Gundy, not as much his brother, but Stan, I really like Stan, when I used to watch the NBA more, I really liked Stan on the call because, he'd give you that coach's insight, but it would, you know, he did it in a very entertaining way.
And I won't be shocked at all if Stan, who coached JJ in Orlando, ends up on the staff for the Lakers for JJ Redick,
yeah.
Because JJ Redick's going to want experience.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like if he builds a staff out.
Jeff's with the Clippers, right? Didn't that just happen? I think in the last couple of days as well. I think the Clippers hired. I believe Jeff Van Gundy has a job on the Clippers staff, and I could see a situation
where
I
don't hear him ever again.
I could see a situation where maybe Stan. I don't know. It just seemed like it's, yeah. It was one of the first. Things I just say
if you
Jim
get on your staff and you know, and Kerr did this in Golden State. He went out. I know his first initial staffs there had guys that had been in the league for forever, you know, as assistant coaches. And I think that's a really important thing to have when you're doing this for the first time. Like, JJ Redick will be the head coach because he is the name. He's got the connection with, you know, LeBron. You know, he's got the connection with current players. But having guys who have been in that role before will help him out tremendously, even if they're not, you know, getting paid like the big shot.
Jeff Van Gundy just won his first NBA championship as part of the Boston Celtics organization, consulting in the front office, hired by Ty Lue as an assistant for the Clippers mm-hmm. earlier this week. They apparently have worked together at USA Basketball
yes.
last couple of years, and they've developed a relationship, and Ty Lue wanted Jeff Van Gundy on the staff. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to have Stan on the staff for the Lakers. It also opens up the question of what ESPN is going to do. The finals coverage was not, I would say reviews were mixed. Justin, is that a fair way of describing ESPN's finals coverage mm-hmm. this year? And JJ Redick in his first year as their primary in-game analyst. Obviously, they'll have to replace him as he moves to the Lakers. We'll see what they do. Mike Breen and Doris Burke, the other two-thirds of the ESPN, primary ESPN coverage for now as they cover the NBA. Let's get to the phones. 334-321-1390. Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Justin. This is Terry. How
Hello, Terry. How are you? Hope you're well.
I'm doing great. Guys, I always heard the job that Hurley coveted the most was the Knicks job.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to listen to whoever, but I don't think he ever seriously considered it as much as people think. Because that's the job he really wants. And when you think about it, geographically, it makes sense.
Yeah, no, he's a New York guy. His dad is a legend in the city of New York for high school basketball. Yeah, I agree. Like, the Lakers are the Lakers. But, like, if it came down between do you want to stay and continue to be awesome at UConn – or go get an NBA job. Like, I think the one he'd really want, you're right, is the Knicks. And it'll be interesting to see what the Knicks do. They are in a good position. Now, this is not the Knicks of the past where they really struggle. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, that would be the job that, like, if the Knicks ever have an opening, that would be it because it just makes way too much sense.
It would be –
And it would be
– Oh, well, go ahead,
It would be a big deal to be, if he could win three in a row because that hadn't been done in a long time, probably since Wooden.
I think it is since Wooden. I think Wooden's the only one that's done that.
And this UConn team has had so much turnover from this past season to what the roster looks like now. I mean, it's essentially a brand-new team, and if he wins a third championship with this group, yeah, it would be – You know, as impressive as anything that a coach has pulled off in the modern era of men's college basketball.
Yeah, I'd like to ask Justin a quick recruiting question, mm-hmm. if possible, about Auburn, if I could.
Sure.
All these guys decommitting from USC, mm-hmm. is there a recruiting opening back up? Is Auburn going to be considered with any of these guys? Because what's the deal out there? I mean, I say about Auburn, but indirectly, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Terry. Like, I know Isaiah Gibson, the number one edge rusher in the country, has visited Auburn. He is the one of the guys who have decommitted from USC recently that I think Auburn probably have the best chance of going after. Now, that's going to be a crazy race for him. Georgia, Ohio State, Tennessee, all these teams are in it.
Justice Terry, the defensive lineman who just decommitted yesterday mm-hmm. from USC, the second of the two, there hasn't been a ton of Auburn in his recruitment.
But for Gibson, you know, he's visited. And the other thing, Terry, I think just to straight up is just I think what a lot of Auburn fans are seeing is that, okay, if USC's bleeding some of these high-level recruits, could that mean that Juju Lewis could be on his way to a flip as well? And I think that's kind of the big thing. But to answer your question directly, yeah, Gibson is a guy that Auburn has had on campus – and is heavily recruiting at that edge rusher spot.
Yeah, with all the guys decommitting from USC, that would make a ton of sense, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Like Auburn sure is in a good position.
Yeah, no, I think Auburn's going to be in a good spot to try to make a move on Juju Lewis. And if they don't end up landing him, I think there's some other quarterbacks that they really like in this class as well. But you're right. Like, this is, you know, if USC – if I don't know what's going on at USC. I've kind of heard that there's some, like, NIL issues out there or some kind of some friction out there potentially. But, yeah, if more and more of these five-star kids decommit, it gives more and more reason for a guy like Juju Lewis to try to go on to a place where – like Auburn, where, you know, could end up having a better, you know, 25 class.
Both of those commitments were from Georgia that decided to drop USC earlier this week. As is Juju Lewis. I think there's a trends are real sometimes, and it's it does seem like something's going on. I don't know with
Georgia's a lot closer to Auburn than Southern California.
It is with Justice Terry. I'd put Georgia in the lead right now, you know, from what I've heard in the day or so since he decommitted from USC, but Gibson seems a little bit more wide open, and as Justin pointed out, he has visited Auburn already in his recruitment, so maybe Auburn can work their way back in for him.
Sure, appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
Appreciate it, Terry.
Thank you,
good
Terry.
Stuff. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll be back.
And 106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Thursday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Justin, tell folks about the Observer.
Yeah, you can go to auburnobserver.com, check out everything we got going on there. This week, did a story on, let's see, I did, this is great radio, Jani Broom. I went back and looked at past, like, what happens when really elite players who had seasons like Jani Broom. What happens when they come back to college? What do they do in that second year? Really good stuff there for Auburn if you look at the numbers. Also did this week our State of the Position series. Switched back to offense this week, running back and tight end. So there's I think both of those are, you know, 2,500 word breakdowns, season previews, everything you need to know about Auburn's running backs and tight ends heading into the 2024 season. Mailbag out tomorrow. And then also we'll do a podcast. If you can't get enough of me and Dan talking, we'll do more of that later today. It'll come out tomorrow morning. Dan and I, I say we're doing an idea that Dan has always wanted to do. I do my mailbag once a week, and I am going to take old mailbag questions and get Dan and Painter's perspective on them. Just a fun way to kind of hit some of the high points, some of these fun topics we get here.
Second
in the
opinion.
Yep.
The second opinion mailbag. It's going to be a blast. You're not going to want to miss that in the Auburn Observer. And as Justin said, auburnobserver.com. You can subscribe.
$6 a month or $60 a year. We email everything out to you. So as soon as a newsletter drops, it comes in your inbox. You can read it there. Or as soon as a podcast comes out, you'll be the first one to know.
And if you buy a year right now, you're locked in for football season, you're locked in for basketball season, and you'll be locked in for all the wacky portal action that you get between, you know, the end of basketball season and right now. You think about all the different pieces of news we've gotten, you know, over the last over
it's
the
great
last
time
12
to
months.
Sign up, I mean, for sure.
Yeah, as we look ahead to what should be a pretty eventful football season. I keep saying, like, even if we were just changing one of the two things between the conference alignment, you know, the implosion of the Pac-12, and now you've got new teams in the ACC and the Big Ten and the SEC and the Big 12 for that matter, you know, the splintering of the Pac-12 between that and the playoff growing to 12, like one of those two things would make. For and I guess you could also say the video game coming back for folks interested in that particular avenue as well. But like any one of those things would make for a significant new era of college football, and you're getting all of them in the next couple of months. So it's an exciting time if you're a fan of the sport, which if you're listening to the show, I imagine you are. It's also an exciting time to follow Justin and all the great work Justin, and I feel weird talking about it in the third person, like the great work Justin and all the guys do at Auburn Observer, which is it's me and Painter, and Painter, but Painter does
a lot
outstanding work behind the scenes and
edits
and on
everything
the podcast.
Yep, and on the podcast.
Love Painter. So it's check out auburnobserver.com and find more of the great work that that Justin Ferguson is doing all year round to follow the Auburn University athletics and the Auburn University athletics department.
So what do we want to talk about now, Dan?
That's an interesting question. I had not.
Are you over or have you properly mourned the Mookie Betts injury yet?
Yeah, I'm so bummed, man. I mean, I guess, I'm not going to get any sympathy from a Braves fan.
Nope, because
you guys are dealing with it.
But you also have Yamamoto down too.
Are you getting?
So you're kind of getting in a little bit of Braves territory.
Is Harris back this year, or is it seeming unlikely?
Maybe.
Think? Okay.
Maybe. I keep seeing August.
Because Strider, Acuña,
Strider's done.
Strider, Acuña, done. And Harris is a brutal draw.
Yeah.
For like a
three All-Stars.
You're gonna lose three All-Stars. Granted, the Braves are deep, and they are getting some quality seasons out of some other players.
Yep.
But those are three. Those
won six
teams
out of their last seven. They've cut that lead by the Phillies down to seven. If the Phillies didn't have a walk off the other night, it could have been down to six. It's a good spot to be in. I was saying I went yesterday. The Braves are hitting the ball right now, which is fun. Beginning of this series, there were a couple 2-1 wins. I was like, whatever. But Sean Murphy, since he came back from that oblique injury, had been hitting like 120-something. He goes 4-for-4 yesterday with two homers, and I think three of the four hits he had were just barrels to the wall. Did a really, really good job. Renato Lopez, by the way, leads the majors in ERA now, which was a spot that that Drew's boy Imanaga had for a while.
Not to get too nerdy about it, but I think Lopez is like a top five NL player in WAR this year, which is like
and he was a guy. And
Cal Quantrill also pretty close to the top of the league.
The Braves also, I think they're 5-1 since they've had to move Jared Kelnick to the leadoff spot, which he's done really well in. There's some move, like Braves fans are wanting to see some moves made. They don't have any outfield depth right now. Poor Adam Duvall and Ramon Laureano, who hit a homer yesterday, had to have to play a lot now. But you look at the Braves and like Alex Anthopoulos has just had a knack for finding value. And you look at it this offseason, Renato Lopez, it was just a question of could they stretch him out to be a starter. Could he be a full-time starter? And lo and behold, we're not quite halfway point in the year, and he's leading the majors in ERA. And then Jared Kelnick, a guy that a lot of people had kind of given up on being a key guy in Seattle. He goes and the Braves make a pretty cheap deal for him in terms of what they had to give up. Now they're paying him a good bit, but he's been excellent this year, a lot better than you expected. So if the Braves can make those moves at the deadline or near the deadline, it's just Anthopoulos has that knack for just finding really good value. Obviously, he did in 21 when they won the World Series.
The Kelenic deal was weird because they made a trade to get a player. It was Jackson Kowar, right? And then they made a trade to get a player. I want to say they gave Kyle Wright.
To get a guy
from Kansas City, and then it seemed like they were excited about bringing Kowar into the system and developing him into from a reliever to a starter themselves, which is becoming kind of trendy where you add a guy like the Brewers are doing that with Junis, where they'll add a guy who was a reliever somewhere else and say, all right, let's tinker a little bit, see if we can turn him into a 5 or 6 inning guy.
The Marlins are doing that with AJ Puck,
right?
We're trying at least.
I mean, Seth Lugo has been a reliever at points in his career. I mean, he started last year, but like teams are doing that, and it seemed like maybe the Braves are going to try that with Kowar, but then a couple of weeks later, Kowar turns into Kelenic from Seattle, which
and then obviously,
Kyle Wright turning into Jared Kelenic
is a Kyle Wright who's not playing this year.
Yes,
I think is a big one, and then obviously. Look, I really liked it. It's kind of like the Matt Olson trades. It was kind of like the Matt Olson trade. I really liked, Christian Pache in theory and Shea Langeliers in theory. you get Matt Olson out of him, you're pretty good. Meanwhile, I really liked Vaughn Grissom. I thought Vaughn Grissom could have had a really good career in Atlanta. But when you can flip him for Chris Sale, and all Chris Sale has to do is be healthy again, and maybe he could be Chris Sale again, that's been so huge for Atlanta, because he has been, outside of really a couple starts, Sale has been just absolutely dominant this year, looking like the old Chris Sale, which is fun to see.
Braves had such a good deadline a couple of years ago. I would wonder if you know what
they're going to have to do it again. They're going to have to do it again.
What they're going to have to do over the my guess is that over the next 6 weeks, you get the Dodgers, the Braves, and to an extent the Phillies, distancing themselves from the rest of the National League. I think some teams
maybe the Brewers. They're just so much better right now than everybody else. And that's the thing.
Devin Williams coming back too.
Boy, as a Braves fan, I really like having Sean Murphy. He's a great player. Oh,
yeah.
Wild Bill. Just a pure hitter, man. I miss him. I miss him a ton.
I mean, those Contreras brothers can hit. I mean, when
they
one
can
of
hit.
Well, I mean, the one that got his arm broken by the bat, you know, is he's down for the count right now. But they're both, you know, very effective.
But the problem is that as we're seeing right now in baseball, and I read an article about this today. Will Salmon, who talk about a small world. Will Salmon covered preps here at the OA News when I was just out of college. And now he covers the Mets for the Athletic, and he's like one of their. It's him. It's like he. It was him. Somebody else at the Athletic, and why am I blanking out? Ken Rosenthal. We're all like doing trade deadlines or trade rumor stuff today. So it's really cool to see Will. Will's a great guy. Will actually got me a job at one point in time. So I'll always be indebted to him, even though he covers a team I can't stand now. But anyway, he was talking there. He wrote in there in a story. The problem that you're facing right now in the National League is that outside of the Marlins and outside of there's another team,
the Rockies, who don't sell.
The Rockies,
who don't sell. Those are the only two teams that are really out of it.
And if you look in the AL, it's the White Sox. Yeah. Maybe
we don't have very much the people.
Yeah, with. But it's like you. They were talking about the prices for some of these guys are going to change in the next month because teams are going to find out who they really are at this.
Well,
this
availability point is going to change as teams fall out of the hunt. I would look at the Nationals as a team that, like, okay, if they're still in the picture for a playoff spot.
But here's the thing: three games below 500, still in a wild card spot in the National League.
So, acknowledging that the only
somebody's got to be the Marlins of this year.
Exactly, acknowledging that the only two teams right now in the National League that aren't going to make the playoffs with some certainty look to be the Mets and the Marlins. Everyone else has a chance of breaking into that final. Like everyone, what did I say? Not the Mets and the Marlins. The Rockies and the Marlins.
The Mets are winning right now.
The Mets have won seven in a row with Grimace. The Mets are hot, but the
still don't have any talent,
outside of the Rockies and the Marlins, you don't have a team that feels like it certainly won't make the playoffs right now.
Yeah.
6 weeks from now.
I believe the fourth, if I remember correctly, the fourth place team in the NL West is the defending NL champion Diamondbacks.
That's correct. That is correct. I mean, Padres and Giants both feel like
Diamondbacks kind of felt like a cute story, like, oh, they got hot at the right time. Corbin Carroll not being as good as he was as a rookie is a little troublesome for them.
So I wonder, as the list grows of National League teams that probably won't make the playoffs, as teams fall out of it, what do those
I think
teams
everybody in
do?
The Central has a shot. Yes. Legitimately, like, if you play baseball in the NL Central, you have a shot.
I still feel like the Nationals feel built.
The Nationals, and I think the Mets will eventually fade.
But the Nationals feel built for a fire sale because virtually no one on that team is under contract after this year, and so guys like Nick Senzel, and you could trade Lane Thomas and Nick Senzel,
because they're preparing for a future where it's like James Woods, and Brady House and Dylan Cruz and CJ Abrams, like, being those everyday guys. I guess Keibert Ruiz is the other one for them.
Yes, and they've got Mackenzie Gore and Irvin and sort of pitching they feel good about. But they're veterans where they could spin those.
Yeah,
guys
everybody
into
else like Gallo, Manessas, Rosario. You would love, if you're a Braves fan, you would love to knock on the door of the Nats and say, "Hey, Eddie Rosario," but I think Eddie's batting like 160 this year. But try to run it back. However, if they did want to run that playbook again. If they want to go around the 2021 playbook again, Jack Peterson is playing really well this season. And if the Diamondbacks fall off, you talk about a lefty power hitter the Braves could really use one of those in that lineup outside of Matt Olson. They've got Matt Olson, obviously.
The names that could become available depending on who decides to sell, right? Like if the Cardinals fall out of it, could Goldschmidt be available to someone who wants to add that bat to the lineup for the last couple months of the season? If the Mets fall out of it, is Pete Alonso on the
table? I keep thinking Pete Alonso's going to move, but I don't know who.
Would the Rockies listen to Ryan McMahon offers right now, who's under contract for a couple of years, but would be an attractive piece?
I think Brendan Rodgers is on expiry. I don't know how good Brendan Rodgers has been playing this year, but
I think he's hurt right now, too.
Okay, he's on expiry.
The Rockies' most tradable pieces would probably be
and then you look at
Quantrill, who's having a good surprising season, but I would say Ryan McMahon.
And you look at the AL with the White Sox, and it's like, okay, who? The only players you really like on that team are guys that like have 5 or 6 years of club control left, like Luis Robert or Michael Kopech. Did you see the Michael Kopech start the other day? I was pointing this out. Apparently, Michael Kopech the other day.
White Sox have that starting pitcher that used to be a National, Fetty, who would
Eric Fetty.
Fetty's a veteran.
Michael Kopech, who they're stretching out to be a starter this year. This is kind of the first thing they're doing with him. He had a start the other day where I think he struck out 14 or 15 guys. He threw one off-speed pitch in the entire start.
Nice.
Just gas and breaking balls.
Just gas-a-hole all day long. Were you at Casey Mize's start? Was he the starting pitcher for
the Tigers? No, he pitched on Tuesday night, and the Braves got after him early. He did pretty well after that. But
you might have been Scoble?
It was Scoble. Okay. They hit.
Yeah.
So
Scoble
Braves
was
left.
Cy Young favorite going into the weekend. In the AL.
The Braves left the bases loaded. They had a close play at first with Duvall trying to beat something out. They left the bases loaded in the first inning at Scoble, and I texted my brother and I said, "They're getting him. Like they are hitting the ball." And sure enough, they ran him out in the fifth inning. I don't know if he's had very many starts this year where he hasn't been able to kind of hit. But you know, we talked about it earlier. Bill being at Rickwood tonight. That's Cards Giants, right?
That's Cards Giants. Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, I knew the Giants were there. Cardinals. Do we know who's starting that game?
That is. I just saw the starting matchup for the. Give me 2 seconds.
My brother
Keaton Wynn starting for the Giants against Palante for the Cardinals.
I went, and this is just completely off subject. Last year when Auburn played in Cal, we went to the Giants game. It was a Giants-Rockies game. And I watched Kyle Harrison pitch start. I don't know how he's doing this year, but I was really, really impressed by him. It was like probably his like second or third career start at that point. That's a fun player. That Giants team, too. It's like if you look at the way – and you obviously know being a Dodgers fan – they have so much money, but there just seems to be something off with that entire team. And I knew they were expecting Jung-Hoo Lee to be healthy this year, but
Webb, Harrison, and Hicks have all been good for the Giants at the front of the rotation this year. That's a big reason why they're still like, you know, I think they're in second
place.
Is
Snell dead?
Snell is he was injured and he came back and was ineffective and he's injured.
But it's the beginning of the year.
Yes.
At the beginning of the year, you never get anything out of Blake Snell.
I mean, I think that they're counting on him to maybe be back in July, August.
Snell's what, 30, it was mid-30s? Maybe a little younger. I wonder if Snell's going to end up being like one of those guys you see you see it more in position players. But like later he gets in his career, he just stays a free agent until like June, and they're like, "All right, he's ready. Now we'll go." Somebody will go try to get
the old Bartolo Colon, you know, the old showing up in
because it's crazy because like he was the Cy Young winner last year after having like a dreadful April.
I think Clemens innovated that. I think Roger Clemens decided he was going to be like, "Yeah, you know, I don't
just see who's good.
Yeah, I don't need to show up until treat it like it's like a trade. It's like a trade, but with a guy who isn't officially on a team."
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Roger Clemens could decide in June, you know, do I want to be an Astro? Do I want to be a Yankee? You know, do I want to go somewhere else this year?
Yeah, if you want to go be a front runner.
Play him, you play him again. Well, no, it's exact. I mean, you don't come back in June to play for a team in
But even like if I'm coming in June, I'm not coming for a team that might be a wild card team or like no. I'm coming right now and I'm playing. You're playing for the Phillies today.
I'm here to play playoff games. That's what we're doing. And that's Yes,
I feel like I feel like Snell could innovate with that.
He could. I mean, he does seem to sign later and later in every.
That's what baseball guys do now, though. It's cycle. Crazy. Yeah,
it's wild stuff. 334-321-1390. We got to take a break, right? All right, we'll be back. You're listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Hey, this is Billy Plummer.
Dan Peck from the Drew at the controls. We will be back with more hour number two coming up.
Give us a call.
Stick around. You're listening to The Drive.
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The second hour of The Drive with Bill Cameron. Bill Cameron is in Birmingham tonight at the MLB game at Rickwood. You can catch that on Fox at 6:15. Special MLB presentation. Salute to baseball history. Salute to Alabama and the city of Birmingham's place in baseball history, including the oldest baseball stadium still in existence in the and still in use in the United States there at Rickwood, a salute to the Negro Leagues as well. With baseball having with that having such a large place in baseball history. Willie Mays passing away earlier this week. I would expect multiple tributes throughout the broadcast to the Say Hey Kid who was born in the state of Alabama and played baseball early in his career for the Birmingham Black Barons in that very ballpark in Rickwood. So check that out tonight if you're a fan of baseball or just history. It's going to feel like I think they've done a really good job with the Field of Dreams games the last couple of seasons, presenting those as an event and something really special. And I imagine tonight's game is going to feel very special as well as baseball salutes an important part of its past in Birmingham tonight. And the game becomes even more special in the wake of the passing of Willie Mays. We got Justin Ferguson in the house from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us for another hour. Justin, something we talked about yesterday, and I know, I mean, it's so... Willie Mays, for a long time, known as the greatest living ball player, and that was one of the nicknames sort of agreed upon for and understandably so.
Here's my question: is he the best to ever play? I think he is.
I mean, I would certainly listen to the Willie Mays argument.
My thing with Mays, and this is as somebody who is a Braves fan, Hank Aaron, the history there is that. The thing that Mays gets is that Mays is, when you look at all of his accolades, the power, the contact, the all the hitting, he's up there with everybody. And he's in a class of only a few. On top of that, he won, 13 gold gloves? And probably the best pure defensive outfielder of at least of his generation.
Asterisk there, which is that the award didn't exist for the first eight years of his career.
And if it is, it's him and Hank Aaron in terms of like the reason WAR, OPS, homers.
The
all
reason
that.
Willie Mays isn't a 22 or 23 time Gold Glove winner is because the award didn't exist.
Right, exactly.
For several of the first.
And
first
so it's
few
like you want to make the argument for Hank Aaron, and I would love to make the argument for Hank Aaron as a Braves fan. Hitting, they're right there with each other. I think Aaron had a little bit more power. But, Mays also served in the military. He always said that he thought he probably lost 60 or 70 homers. It's the fielding, though, that just changes everything there for him. It's kind of like in this era, like you would say, oh, Barry Bonds. You look at Barry Bonds' WAR. Obviously, the steroid factor in there. But early, if early career Barry Bonds, what he was as a runner and a fielder, if he was that his entire career, sure. But the thing with Bonds is that he got to the end of his career and he was, the size of a tank.
There's the Aaron and Mays thing has a Griffey Bonds parallel.
Yes.
It didn't work out that way with Griffey and Bonds being the two top players throughout their careers and finishing, at the top of the leaderboard in stats the way. I mean, although Bonds did, in fact, finish with more homers than anybody and more homers in a single season than anybody. I know that the steroid thing probably makes it tougher for people to want to acknowledge Barry Bonds as the greatest living ball player now, but I think he's probably got the strongest argument. Griffey had that great career, although it's marred by, you know, the his unavailability the last 10 years or so. Of his career.
So if Mays was the greatest living ball player, who is it now?
Bonds, I would say, which I know people makes people uneasy because of because of the PED thing. But and you know what?
Fourth all time in WAR. Yeah.
And if folks want to argue Griffey because of what he was at his prime, I know it's not.
Might be A-Rod.
I know. Well, that's I think if we're DQing the PED guys for you know whatever, then I mean I can understand why people would want to lean towards. Lean towards Griffey in that situation, but I think the irony there, of course, being Bonds is Willie Mays' grandson or godson, the godson of Willie Mays. So 334-321-1390, the number to dial. We'll talk some Auburn stuff too, if it strikes our fancy with big recruiting weekends coming up. We're about a month away from SEC Media Days, and we'll be getting closer to the season every single day here on the Drive. Let's get to the phones. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Uncle Ollie.
Hello, Uncle Ollie.
Hey, brother. How y'all doing?
We're doing all right. Good to hear from you, Unc.
I appreciate it. Hey, listen, first of all, I listen to all these podcasts. I'm too involved in it. But I keep hearing all these hints about four or five guys that are about to pop. And I hope it's all real. And I know they all have their intel, but if that's the truth, this is going to be an incredible recruiting year for Auburn.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the thing, I go back to last year at signing day where Hugh Freeze was like, top 10 class, great. We want a top 5 class next year. And I thought when he said that, I was like, man, that's pretty lofty considering what the superpowers do in recruiting. But, I mean, as it's lined up right now, they're number 6, and they got plenty of room to grow, and they're in a really good spot. And, like, you're not going to get everybody you want, but, like, if they get a good number of the targets they still have on the board, top 5 is definitely in range. And, yeah, you're talking about one of the best recruiting classes Auburn's ever had.
Yeah. And if they flip a couple of these guys from the school – the west of us, that would just be the dagger in the heart. I mean, that would just be the dagger.
Oh, I mean, to be clear, Kalen DeBoer and Alabama are putting together a very impressive recruiting class
to his point, there are several guys that Auburn could flip from them, and that would be huge
for sure. And this is a huge year in state with multiple. Alabama players in the top 10, in the top 50, in the top 100.
And Dan and I talked about this not too long ago on our show, but like you look at what is in this state right now, and if there ever was a year to take advantage of the fact that Nick Saban's no longer at Alabama, this is it. And it seems like right now Auburn is doing a really good job of that.
Yeah. And here's the other point. When you're recruiting, it's great you get a 4-star out of California. And you get a 4-star out of Washington. But listen, this state is very clannish. And so these high school coaches, if you start ignoring the guys that they have and Auburn makes inroads this year, I'm telling you, it's going to be even more difficult next year to get into those high schools.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. We saw that. We saw that with the last coaching staff. You know, if you don't do your job in recruiting, if you don't do your – and recruiting is such a multi-year thing now, you know? You want these kids in 25, but, like, the work has to be started a year or two earlier.
Or longer.
Oh, yeah. I think about basketball recruiting and how they're looking at kids when they're in middle school.
Well, and if you're Kalen DeBoer, that's not to say that he can't do it, but with Kalen DeBoer,
you're playing from behind.
You have so much work to do to establish relationships with the people that you're talking about, Uncle Ollie, the folks that you need to be on good terms with in order to keep those pipelines of talent flowing.
Yeah. So I'll go off topic for a minute. I guess you all heard Donald Sutherland died today.
Yes.
It's a sad piece of news.
Everybody talks about his greatest role. I'm going to tell you his greatest role.
Oh, hold on. Can I guess?
Yes.
All right. He's not in this movie very long. But his scene, and it's one scene in JFK,
mm-hmm. That's what I was
thinking. Is absolutely astonishing. He shows up a little more than midway through JFK and has a long monologue with Costner, and it's one of the great one scene performances in the history of film. So that was going to be my guess.
What's your pick?
Okay, well, I thought you had it when you said one scene,
mm-hmm.
but the one scene, the greatest role I ever saw him play was in Animal House.
Okay, yep. Yes, sir.
The other great one scene performance in his career is as the professor in Animal House.
Scene yes. ever. So I you're love it. Saying that our universe could actually be an atom in a monster's fingernail. I mean, that was like the greatest scene ever.
That
was my pick.
Because you brought him up, I will also throw out there, TCM shows this sometimes. You can find it. You can find it around. But I don't know how many people have seen this movie. It's over 50 years old. Donald Sutherland plays a detective in a movie called Klute. Klute from the early 70s. Jane Fonda plays a call girl in New York City, and Donald Sutherland is in pursuit of a person or person sending threatening letters to folks, including Jane Fonda's character. And it is just Roy Scheider's in it, and he is wonderful as this sort of closed off small town detective trying to solve a very serious situation in New York City.
Well, if you ever watched the documentary on Animal House, when they got Donald Sutherland and he was somehow connected with somebody that was putting this together, when they got him to say, okay, yeah, I'll be a part of it, that's when they were able to be legitimate,
mm-hmm.
and were able to go to the big wigs and say, hey, we can make this happen. So Sutherland was like the final piece that made it all work.
No, I mean, I'm glad. You know what? I'm glad you mentioned the passing of a guy who was just a career and a guy who unforgettable, Donald Sutherland.
Yep. All right. Well, y'all have a great day.
Appreciate it, yeah. Uncle Ollie. Great stuff. Let's take a break. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Cody Dykes and the team.
7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron in Birmingham tonight. He'll be back tomorrow. Tell us about his adventures in Rickwood, checking out the historic MLB game at Rickwood Park tonight featuring the Giants and the Cardinals. You can check that out on the Fox Network coming up in about an hour with the salute to baseball history, tribute to Willie Mays, whole lot of cool stuff going on in Birmingham tonight. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. That's presented by our friends at Skybar. 334-564-1840, the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your podcast. Do want to mention hour number two of The Drive is sponsored by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And it's the off season, Justin. We mm-hmm. talked, you know, some of the headlines, NBA season ending earlier this week. JJ Redick getting the Lakers job. We'll see. I guess the draft's a week from today. One week from today, right. I believe you have the NBA draft. I think part of the reason that this year's NBA draft lacks a little bit of steam is that the top two picks could be relatively unknown players. Mm-hmm. To
this is a bad draft.
College bad. Yeah, it's just a bad draft. I mean, I don't know if I like. I think we did this thought experiment on the podcast, but I don't know. Like, if you said pick somebody in this draft that you expect to be a solid contributor for an NBA team 5 years from now? Not an all-star, not the best player on a contender, any like just someone who you feel like will be a helpful rotational piece in this draft. I mean, I love Dalton Connect's offense. I could see why the answer might be a Connect or a Reed Shepard or a Steph Castle. Like it's a crapshoot. It's a dice roll. I mean, those are three guys. Those are three guys that I don't know if in a stronger. Is it unfair to say in a stronger draft those aren't lottery picks?
Yeah, no, and they could be absolutely right.
And they could be top. They could be three of the top five picks overall. Like they could be the first three college players taken.
We were in Atlanta last week, and we walked by State Farm Arena, and they had the promotion for the number one pick draft party in Atlanta, and I was like, man, that is so depressing for Atlanta because they'll get a player out of it, but like this is not a good draft. And I think about how close they were.
It stings. It stings so when you have the first overall pick, and it's a guy who like 2 years later is just on your team as a one of
and like you can't even trade it. Like you couldn't even trade it for an established guy. But like I think about how Zion really wanted to go to the Hawks, and they were close to winning that lottery, and they didn't. And then, obviously, watching Luka play in the finals after all that went down with him and Trae Young, not great. It's a tough franchise. I feel bad. I don't know how many people listening are actually Hawks fans, but I feel for you.
So how do you? I know I can say Sar.
Sar, yeah. All right. Sar's the guy that I think most people think he could go to number one.
And then the other one's Zachary.
Ricochet. Yeah.
I don't think that's the correct. It'd be pretty cool if it was pronounced Ricochet. But those are the two. I guess
Zachary Ricochet. Anyway,
soccer. Ricochet.
I saw a thing the other day. His athletic testing.
This is Zach?
Yes. Okay. At the wing spot, I think this is the guy. His athletic testing at the wing spot was comparable to Adam Morrison.
Okay.
Which is not what you want from a 6'9 wing. Like when you talk about vert, speed, all that, he tested. It's like there was another one.
There are three French prospects that all might be going in the top 10 in this draft, because there's another one, Salon. Who's also been speculated on? You got a couple of Kentucky players. You got a couple of French guys that could be like five of the top 10 picks in this draft, right? Because Dillingham has seen his stock rise. There's Reed Shepard as well, who's been talked about as a top three, top five pick in this draft. So it's it seems to be a draft light. It's heavy on potential and light on guys that you feel even close to certain are going to be immediate contributors in the NBA or even eventual contributors in the NBA. And I mean, and I think the idea that Reed Shepard, Steph Castle, and Dalton Connect could be three of the first six players taken in the draft, and maybe the first three college players taken in the draft is a sign of that.
Yeah,
I mean, Klingon and Castle are both projected as lottery picks as well. But it does seem to be a tough year to be a team picking in the top three, which is where the Hawks, the Wizards, and the Houston Rockets find themselves. I do suppose in the case of the Rockets and the Spurs, who pick fourth, you feel like, well, we took some strides this year. We're seeing some returns on our young, on our recent draft capital. The recent picks that we've invested in. So maybe adding a piece like a Reed Shepard to the Rockets or a Steph Castle to the Spurs can continue that rebuild. But for teams, God, the Wizards have been bad for so long. And you think that
it's like the Wizards have the worst history ever. Like they've only had It's some crazy thing. Like, they've only won 40 games, like, yeah. like a handful of times.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I think it's 45.
It's pretty awful. Yeah. I mean, they've had occasional runs where, I don't know. I feel like they won a couple of games with Gilbert Arenas. You know,
John Wall, the John Wall years they made the playoffs. Yeah.
I mean, but it's not. No, it's not a. Not a tremendously inspiring recent history or yep. or
not at all.
Yeah, and it's too bad. And that's in a city that has shown. I mean, Georgetown's history and, mm-hmm. and the way some of the mid majors like DC has a basketball.
It's a basketball city.
Yeah, it's a basketball. Yeah. But the NBA
it's very
team
much a basketball city.
The NBA team has never really been able to make it on that, and it's a tough year to be picking one or two in that draft. 334-321-1390 the number to dial. You're going to hear from Bruce next week, right?
Yeah, Ambush starts next week, and I believe Bruce is in Birmingham next Tuesday night.
First time you've talked to him since the Duke game became yes. official. I think that would be yes. the case. So yes. he's probably going to want to talk about that mm-hmm. as that's a big deal for
yeah.
For
maybe
Bruce.
Maybe Auburn will have another game or two announced by then. Who knows? But yeah, no, it's exciting time. They're underway with practices. You know, getting rolling. I know there's a lot of excitement around this team, just because of the way some of these guys look. They're full. They're all together now. Everybody's in. Everybody's practicing. It'll be interesting. But yeah, that Duke game we talked about last week on when I was on here. But like that Duke game was, you know, a really big sign for where this program is at this moment.
Do you buy what Bruce is saying about like that? This is a you know a concrete sign of. You know, this is an acknowledgement from ESPN, mm-hmm.
yeah,
from
no, college I, yep, basketball 100%.
To be selected
100%.
As the team from the yeah. SEC to play Duke.
They could have easily given Duke, like...
Kentucky or Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been very easy mm-hmm. to give. And you could have justified it with new coach at Kentucky and their Kentucky, or it's Calipari mm-hmm. taking his new Arkansas team
yeah.
to Duke. Like, it would have been...
It
would have been business as
usual. They could have given them Alabama.
They could have given them Alabama. Well, and I said that. I mean, you could have given... And
Final Four team.
Well, but I would feel much the same way if Auburn had gotten North Carolina instead of Duke. And you're talking mm-hmm. about Auburn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
if Auburn were yeah. going to Chapel Hill and yeah. Alabama were going to Duke, I think
it's good that Auburn and Alabama, as the two who I think are going to be the two best teams in the SEC this upcoming year, get the two traditional powers.
It would have
been SEC.
It would have been very ACC. Easy. It would have been very easy for ESPN, especially over a multi-day event, mm-hmm. to say, you know what, anyone's going to people are going to watch anyone we send to Duke. So if you want to send traditional powers, or if you want to send
yeah.
Florida, or you want to send Texas and Oklahoma,
Florida would have been fun.
You could send Texas or Oklahoma as new teams mm-hmm. in the league. Like, and anyone we send to Duke, anyone we send to Carolina will be fun. And because Alabama and Auburn opened the season in the top 10, you could send anyone from the ACC, from Boston College to Miami, anyone from that league. You know, you could send Stanford and Cal if you wanted to, and anyone going and playing at Alabama or at Auburn will be an event because of where those teams were ranked. To decide to match. I mean, these are Alabama, Auburn, Duke, and Carolina are probably the two teams from their respective leagues that will be ranked in the preseason top 10.
Yeah.
And to match them up in the ACC-SEC Challenge correct. Instead of splitting them into four separate games, which would have been understandable.
Sure.
Because you make four TV events.
But you get the best games. Yeah. Especially if you're playing concurrently. Yeah. You know, I think, you know. Stack them up.
You get yeah. Instead, you get a Wednesday National Signing Day, right? It's the Wednesday that is
National Signing Day. This is going to be if I end up going to Duke, it'll be the second time in 3 years I've missed National Signing Day for basketball, which I will take 100 times out of 100. No disrespect to recruiting, it's very very important, but I'll let the recruiting guys do the recruiting thing and let I focus on the basketball.
With the way people are talking though, and again, you know, a lot can happen. But between that being National Signing Day oh, yeah. and Auburn playing,
I was in Seattle in the snow for Freeze's first signing day.
Yeah,
yeah.
For Auburn to be playing Duke that night with National Signing Day that morning, like that could be a very busy day.
Oh yeah,
for,
massive.
Yeah, I mean, because especially if Auburn pulls off, you know, what folks are talking about Auburn maybe being mm-hmm. able to pull off on the recruiting trail between now and National Signing Day. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer joining us on a Thursday afternoon. Drew at the controls. I'm Dan Peck. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive. Tell you what, we'll take a break and we'll come back with more. Stick around. This is The Drive.
ESPN 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us. Justin, you got a busy month coming up. You got stuff going on, you know, as we await the release of the NCAA video game.
Correct. That's what we're talking about.
That's not exactly what we're talking about at the moment, but Ferg's got you recently moved.
Yep.
So I mean, it's been an eventful couple of weeks.
Eventful,
couple of months.
Eventful and expensive.
Eventful and expensive, and so with that in mind, you can tell folks about the Auburn Observer.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. It is $6 a month or $60 a year. Dan made a really good point. I haven't even thought about this. Shows you how good of a job I do at running my own website. Dan made a really good point earlier, and I want to repeat it here. If you subscribe right now, you're going to get all football season. You're going to get all basketball season. You're going to get all portal season in both sports. You're going to get everything. And then you won't have to pay again. If you buy the year, you won't have to pay again until this time next year. So it's a great time to do it. AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there. We email everything out to you. You don't have to wait for – you don't have to go to a website. You don't have to go to a message board. You don't have to go to a, you know, wait for links on Twitter because Twitter's dead. Any of that stuff. All you got to do is sign up. Every time I write something or every time we do a podcast, it goes straight into your inbox. So you can read and listen on your own time. And that's all at AuburnObserver.com. Auburn football, men's basketball. Check it out.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson in the studio with Drew at the controls, bouncing around different subjects. I haven't talked too much college football, but it's not – I mean, we're in an era where it's – I mean, it's optimism mode. You know, it's magazine season. And,
haven't got a magazine yet this year. I usually pick up an Athlon at some point. I haven't yet.
Do you expect Auburn where on this roster would you expect preseason voters to take notice of Auburn?
I think Phil Steele's stuff's already out. Maybe Athlon's out too. I think personally, for me, I think Jarquez Hunter and Rivaldo Fairweather should be preseason first team because they are the best players coming back at their respective positions. Jarquez is the leading returning rusher in the SEC, and Rivaldo is the leading returning tight end. If you look at catches and touchdowns, kid at Ole Miss has got him beat by a few yards, but Rivaldo had the better overall season.
Judkins moving on from Ole Miss
to Ohio State. It matters a ton there. Obviously, you know, Rivaldo doesn't have to compete with Brock Bowers anymore for your tight end love. Elsewhere, I think, you know, maybe you get some love for Keontae Scott. I think Keontae Scott's gotten some first team looks for some folks. And then it's like
defensively, it feels kind of vibes based, right?
I would say
McLeod
could be up there. Asante could be up there. You know, he doesn't have the numbers, so preseason-wise, like, people aren't going to, like, go crazy for him. I wouldn't be surprised if after this season we're talking about Keldrick Falk as an all-SEC pick of some kind. Kay and Lee, maybe. But, yeah, it is kind of vibes-based on that side of the ball. And then, yeah, like, you know, people are going to be in wait-and-see mode about your wide receivers.
I think you could justify a vote for Eugene Asante based on the season he had last year.
And I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know a lot about the interior lines of the SEC, but Connor Liu. I mean, I think Connor Liu is a good center pick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there are centers coming back with more.
I'm not going to media days this year, so I don't have to vote in all SEC stuff this year. So I'm glad I don't have to do all that research.
I think there are a couple
because I usually try to take it a little too seriously.
I think there are a couple centers in the SEC who have like a ton of career starts.
That might be right.
Like, LSU and LSU Georgia.
There's usually a guy at Kentucky who's played for a ton.
And
you also got to keep in mind Texas and Oklahoma are in the league now too.
And I think Texas returns everyone from the offensive line last year, four of the five, or something like that.
They could
make their presence felt on. I mean, look, Quinn Ewers could be your. I mean, Quinn Ewers, Brock Bauer, Quinn Ewers versus Carson Beck versus Jalen McLeod or not Jalen McLeod, Bama, Milroe.
Jalen Milroe.
Milroe versus Beck versus
I'm going
Ewers.
Ewers.
To be,
I'm
to
going
be
Ewers. Pre,
yeah, I mean,
yeah.
I think Ewers is a totally
I would go Ewers Beck, but, you know, Milroe definitely
Milroe's
could
in
get
the,
that
yeah,
love.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Milroe's in the picture there, but that's going to be, that'll be interesting to see. So, yeah, I think Auburn could be. I think Asante, without knowing what everyone's linebacker situation looks like, I think.
Asante got the numbers, but it's like the Auburn's defense wasn't great last season, so you don't get as much love because of that. But I
wonder how many linebackers who played a ton are back, too, like if that's a position where maybe.
And
maybe
it's crazy Asante's because Asante's played a ton, but it wasn't 2 years ago.
like, you know. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Let's go to the phones. Caller, you are on the air.
Hey, it's Mitch in Florida.
Hello,
hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys.
Mitch, what can you tell us about wings on Highway 98 in Destin and Okaloosa Island and Fort Walton Beach?
Okay, well, as soon as you go over the bridge, you know, out of Fort Walton to Okaloosa Island, there's like an Alvin's on the left.
Yep.
There's a Surf Style on the other corner. Mm-hmm. There's a Tom Thumb on the corner, and the diagonal corner from Alvin's, I think, was a Wings, but they knocked that down.
Oh,
interesting. Okay. I wonder how many of those were they surf zones? What did you call them?
Surf Style.
I think some of the
I've been to go.
Now, do they have?
I saw a ton of them last year.
They had the fluorescent lights everywhere and the mostly glass fronts. I wonder if the Wings became Surf Style.
That might be it. No.
Yeah, it could be. I try to avoid that area after dark.
Yeah,
because of the tourists and the traffic.
Oh yeah. You were talking about Okaloosa. That's like when we used to go to the beach. That was the beach for me. Is we would always just go to the big park there at Okaloosa Island. So I know that area very, very well.
Oh well, yeah. When I was in high school and college in Auburn, that's where we went. Spring break, we always went to Okaloosa Island.
Yep.
And then when I was in tech school at Herbert Field, we went to Okaloosa Island. So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Been there lots of times. And even yesterday, I was going over the bridge away from Okaloosa Island, and the traffic was back. It was over the bridge, down through the little downtown, and around the corner. It was just bumper to bumper on a Wednesday.
Yeah, no, that's
trying to get to Okaloosa.
Now, Mitch, my recommendation for folks, and I'm sure this store has ascended to the next life, but there were two locations of a store called Beach Bums in Destin. One of them, I want to say, would have been Market Shops at Sandestin, or pretty close to the Market Shops there near the entrance to the. To the Sandestin Resort, over by the outlets, and the other one would have been closer to the other one would have been closer to the Mid Bay Bridge, somewhere on 98. But they had a couple of locations of slightly higher end, but still, I would say going heads up with Alvin Island, for sunglasses and swimwear and beach accessories and suntan lotion and stuff like that. But they had some really cool stuff at Beach Bums, and I'm sure. That place that would be for some of the longtime visitors at Destin. They might remember Beach Bums, but I'm sure that's not there anymore.
Yeah, I don't think there's when you come over the Mid Bay Bridge and take a right. I think there's an Alvin's, the next light on the left, and then I think there's another place quite like it on the right hand side, because they always have a marquee saying, you know, free beach bag or something like that, or free water taffy or something. So, yeah, they're still down there. But
I can't say, you know what, though? I can't say no to some free saltwater taffy. I mean, if that's complimentary, I'm buying a towel if it gets me some free saltwater taffy. Although I guess at that point, the saltwater taffy is not free because you had to buy the towel to get it.
Yeah. But the reason I called mainly was I walked out into the garage last night, and I have ESPN 104.3 down here, and they had a national show on, and the guys, they were discussing about the Celtics winning the championship and how they were sort of lucky because all the teams they played, I guess, had injuries, and they just went right through, and their question.
They were sort of lucky because they were by far the best team all season long. You know, they were lucky. Yeah. They're lucky there wasn't a better team this year, I guess. You're pretty lucky that way, but...
But they put out the question, you know, who do you think was, you know, the, in your opinion, the luckiest team to win a championship? And, you know, some people, somebody called about, I guess, the Giants that went 9-7 and I think won the Super Bowl and some other things. Well, I actually got in, and my luckiest team of all time was the 1983 Miami Hurricanes that won the national championship.
Because they didn't have to contend with is that the Gopher 2 game?
Yes. That's the year that Auburn only lost to Texas at home. I actually sold programs and sold coats inside for that game. We lost 20-7, and we played, I think, a total of 8 bowl teams in or 9 if you count Michigan in a 12-game schedule. And I think Miami got blown out by Florida in the first game that season. I think they played maybe 2 or 3 at the most bowl teams that year. Then they got Nebraska in their home stadium, in their hometown. So I consider them the luckiest team to win a championship.
What's unfortunate is, and it was the way things were done back then, but,
yeah.
I'm nervous about what the expanded playoff is going to do to the college football regular season, because I love how much is riding on every individual game in college football, and the thought that, oh man, that third loss in the regular season and you have virtually no chance of winning it all, and we're going to lose some of that when the door is still open for a 9-3 team to make the 12-team playoff. But the upside of a playoff is that you had situations in the past, and 1983 is one of them, where it's just a mess. The title picture at the end is a mess, and you've got multiple teams with good claims, and they can't, they're not playing each other and settling it on the field.
Right. Well, I mean, everybody back then thought Auburn was going to win the national championship because Nebraska was 1, Texas was 2, Auburn was 3. I don't know where. Well, anyway, Georgia beat Texas in the Cotton Bowl, and Miami beat Nebraska in the Orange Bowl. So 1-2 fell. Auburn only won 9-7, but Miami jumped from 5-1. So yeah, back in the old poll days. But I think Auburn still claims that national championship. They should. The New York Times gave us the national championship, and I think Alabama claims the national championship that the New York Times gave them. So we should claim it also.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a camp that says, hey, if anybody ever gave you a title, just claim it. Why not?
Exactly. All right, guys. That's all I got. My update down here in Northwest Florida, War Eagle. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
Great stuff. Now, I generally it's a perfect season, and I have no problem with like championship rings and things like that. I'm a little queasy about like Auburn celebrating 04 as a national championship because it's, you know, we were participating in a system where there is a national champion from that year, but it's too bad because sometimes, you know, you have those, but I guess in the camp, if people are in the camp of, if you, especially when you get into further into history with your national champion, when the championships were more frequently split between several teams and there wasn't a universally agreed upon system for deciding a national champion. If you want to claim more of those, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with it. I'm 04 is one where I'm a little bit more on the.
I think 04 is the one where it's just like, yeah, but like, you know, if 04. If the national champion in 04 wasn't USC,
yeah.
if it was a team that wasn't quite as good as that superpower USC was, a team that had beaten you the two previous years, that's the other thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like we had seen Auburn versus USC before.
Well, we'd seen Auburn versus USC in 03, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if those two teams had met in 04.
No, I'm just saying, like you know, it's USC. It was that USC era where they were just ultra dominant. But then two, it was just like, okay, we literally just saw you twice not be very competitive against that USC.
And three, you had a situation where the teams that opened the year 1 and 2 didn't lose, which I think would have been. I mean, I think that anyone in the SEC would have found themselves on the outside looking in because you have a situation where 1-2. I mean, Alabama, a year later.
I think Auburn beats Oklahoma. I don't think they beat USC.
It was a good Oklahoma team.
It's a very good Oklahoma team. That was a very good Auburn team.
It absolutely was. The following year, you have a situation where USC and Texas open the year as 1-2, and they don't lose until Texas beats USC in the national championship game. That year, you had Alabama start the season 8-0, 9-0. That's the year with the Brody Croyle the game in Jordan-Hare, but that Alabama team starts the year 9-0, and I think there was someone would have had to be left out if USC, Texas, and Alabama had all finished the 2005 season with undefeated regular season. So I think it happened to Auburn in 2004, but it was certainly a possibility to happen to just about anybody who finished undefeated in the old system. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. I'll tell you what, we'll take a break. Caller, hang on, we'll get to you when we come back. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Hey, this is Kyle Rush with BC.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for everything. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Dan and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out. Drew at the controls. Bill should be back tomorrow. He's in Birmingham tonight for the game at Rickwood with Matt. Should be a lot of fun. Let's get to the phones. We had a caller hanging on when we went to commercial. I'm going to assume that caller is still there in lieu of knowing for sure. Let's find out. Caller, you are on the air.
Yes, I'm still here. This is Jerry.
Hello, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry. Hey, how are y'all?
Doing well. How are you, Jerry?
I'm good. Listen, wasn't 04 the year that Reggie Bush and his family got in all the trouble about illegal payments and lost his Heisman?
Reggie Bush played the 03, 04, and 05 years at USC.
05 was when his Heisman got ripped from him.
I believe had USC won the 2005 national championship, there is a question of whether or not they would have been able to hold on to it.
They got beat by Vince Young in Texas.
They lost that game to Texas. Yeah. But I believe they have vacated games from that season and maybe the Pac-12 championship they won. That season,
but it was one year after the one Auburn was up for.
Okay, so they didn't vacate.
No, they didn't. Yeah, not in 04.
Oh, and one other thing, I was going to mention 83. Man, we beat Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Alabama, and Maryland for homecoming, and they had Boomer Esiason as the quarterback.
Yep. Yeah, that 83 season is one of the underrated, I don't think, especially people like me, I wasn't alive in 83, people my age and younger, I don't think they realize, they may have heard of the great years of Auburn history. 83 gets overlooked a ton just because of, only one loss to Texas, but you look at who they beat that year, it was phenomenal.
And I want to clarify something because we got that wrong, Justin. USC vacated the final two victories of 04.
Oh.
The conference championship win and the 04 national championship
game. Okay, we did get it wrong.
And every game from 05, as well as Reggie Bush. Yeah, they're not recognized as the 04 champion by the Football Writers Association of America any longer.
Okay, so you're right, Jerry.
The Associated Press still recognizes the Trojans as the 2004 national champions after winning, after finishing first in their poll. And I guess some people would argue that if USC vacates, technically Oklahoma would then slide into position because they're the team that would. I mean, does Oklahoma then win the national championship game if USC vacated it?
They did play in it, so that's a valid argument.
That's that's the Miss America thing, right? If the winner doesn't get it, you give it to the runner-up.
Yeah, 83 was one of the first years I had season tickets. So, it was,
that's a great year to have them.
Yeah.
All right, enjoy your show.
Great stuff, Jerry. Thanks.
I mean 83 does not get as much recognition as it should. Like, everybody, they'll say 93, the undefeated year, 93, 04, 10, obviously, 13 gets a, will always be, 83, though, man, you look, the end of the 83 year.
It's tell you what, once 17's regular season was a wild ride.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's the people will. I mean,
it's two losses though.
They're two losses. Yeah.
But look, here we go. Starting October 29th, Auburn beats number 5 Florida, number 7 Maryland, number 4 Georgia, number 19 Alabama, number 8 Michigan to end the year. Bang, 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 bang. Like, crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
We will be recording a podcast tonight for folks for the Auburn Observer subscribers.
Mailbag coming out tomorrow as well. You'll double up tomorrow if you subscribe.
The Auburn Observer Intelligentsia will be able to check that out.
That was a clue on Jeopardy yesterday.
I was wondering
if that was why you threw it out there.
It was.
Hey, right. Wild that she lost finally.
I know.
She was so mad. You could tell how upset she was. Shout out to the guy for going nuts on the Daily Double though.
Yeah,
you got to do that. You got to do that when you're beating an ace.
That's Ken's strategy. Yeah. That's what you know. What
Holzhauer? Holzhauer used to be crazy at that.
Justin Ferguson, AuburnObserver.com. Thanks for joining us, bud.
Absolutely.
Bill will be back tomorrow. I'm out tomorrow. I'm going to Lexington, Kentucky to visit some family.
I wonder what you told me you were going to Lexington. Raymond,
a Raymond family reunion. My grandmother's extended family on her side get
very
together
cool.
And a couple of pecks draw straws and the short straws go to the... That's a joke. I'm looking forward to it. But I will be back on Monday. Bill and Don Dunn tomorrow for everybody here in the studio. Good night.